This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-3 vote that the Bush administration overstepped its authority regarding the detainees at the Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba, specifically in regard to ordering military war crimes trials for the prisoners. Writing for the majority, Justice John Paul Stevens said those proposed trials are illegal, both under U.S. law and the internationally recognized Geneva Conventions, which protect the rights of soldiers and prisoners of war. At the White House today, the president responded to the court's ruling by saying that he would work with Congress to get their approval so that the U.S. can try terrorism suspects at military tribunals. There are currently about 450 detainees at the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo Bay. The decision today did not mention whether the prison should be closed down. Also at the White House today, the president met with the Japanese Prime Minister, who will be leaving office soon. The two countries are united in sending North Korea a message that it is unacceptable to test launch a long-range missile. In Washington, the head of the Veterans Administration announced that the stolen laptop computer and hard drive that held personal information on more than 26 million U.S. veterans has been found. According to a special agent, forensic tests revealed that those sensitive files were not accessed. There have been no arrests in the incident so far. In Kirkuk, Iraq, a suicide bomber today hit a funeral procession. Iraqi police say that 17 people were killed and 50 injured. In the Gaza Strip today, Israel continued its military campaign to secure an Israeli soldier who is said to be in the custody of Hamas gunmen. Israeli troops have arrested dozens of Hamas lawmakers. Meanwhile, Israeli officials say that a hostage was found shot to death in the head in the West Bank. Palestinian militants say they killed him after kidnapping him. At the United Nations today, Iran's foreign minister rejected a July 5th deadline from the Group of Eight Industrialized Nations for Iran to respond to the package of incentives offered to halt its controversial nuclear program. He stated again that Tehran would respond by August 22nd. In Kuwait, for the first time, women are voting and running for office. Altogether, 25 of the 250 total candidates trying to get a seat on the parliament are women. And in Indonesia, the editor-in-chief of Playboy magazine is named as a suspect in an indecency case. You're listening to QNN.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The oil company BP is under federal investigation for illegally manipulating propane prices in 2004. BP traders are accused of buying large quantities of propane to gain a dominant market position. The company denies any wrongdoing. The Commerce Department reports that in the first quarter of the year, the U.S. economy grew at a 5.6% rate. That's the fastest growth in 2.5 years and more than first thought. An improvement in the country's trade deficit reportedly helped the gross domestic product. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates today by a quarter point to 5.25%. It's the 17th straight interest rate hike. For the third straight week in a row, mortgage rates went up. Freddie Mac reports that the nationwide average rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is now 6.78%. That's the highest level in more than 4 years. The Labor Department says that first-time claims for state unemployment insurance benefits rose last week to 313,000. That's a slightly larger number than expected. However, analysts say the levels still indicate a healthy job market. Google is launching a payment service that stores users' credit cards so they can purchase items online faster. The internet search engine company is trying to expand its reach. Light Sweet Crude is currently trading at $73.55 a barrel today. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 176 points. The Nasdaq is up 49 points. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean stride.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome back to Radio for a Free America for this Thursday afternoon. It's about about 6 minutes past the hour here in the United States of America. Glad to have you aboard with me. I want to reiterate the contest that I have going on before we get too far into the program, just to sort of let you know about that. You know, you can go to brucebirch.com, scroll all the way to the bottom of the page, and there is a list of terms of listeners have put in input to me about how they would like to term the religious right. And when I mean the religious right, I mean folks like Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, who else? James Dobson. You know, all those guys that like to tell you how to live your life, and then they get caught having sex with little boys or whatever it is that they like to get caught doing. And, you know, it's happened too many times, too many times for that to be, not part of the normal things, courses of action for those guys. Anyway, point being is that if you go to brucebirch.com, now we're not talking about regular Christians. Now, I had a conversation today with a friend of mine who listened to the show yesterday, and he got a little upset that we were talking about regular, religious folk, and no, I'm not talking about regular religious folk, because regular religious folk to me are, you know, just are normal everyday people who are, going through their lives on a daily basis, and they choose to worship in the way that they choose to worship, and that's absolutely fine with me. What I have an issue, what I take issue with, is people who like to come along and tell me how to live my life. What I take issue with is people who tell me that their way is the only way and there is no other way to live. That's what I take issue with. I do. And, you know, if you want to talk about it, you can call me. I really would love to hear from you. That number is, as you heard at the top of the hour, 1-877-443-2366. I don't want to upset folks over this topic. It's one of those, I'm talking about those guys who, you know, get on the air and like James Dobson, and they advocate, you know, they advocate you taking showers with your underage son to keep him from being homosexual. That's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. That's the kind of folks we're talking about. We're talking about the real far right wing nuts of the religious community, not your normal everyday folks. We're talking about the ones who make the Christian religion look very much like the Taliban. Okay, all right. Yeah, you can go to brucebirch.com, scroll all the way to the bottom of the page. You can vote if you want to vote. If you're upset about this topic, I apologize to you for being upset, but the reality is that this is we're just having a little fun here. Just having a little fun, trying to kick it back, trying to have a little fun. No problems, no worries, mate. Today has been a landmark day, but before we get into that, we're going to run down the laundry list, if you will, of things that I have to cover really quickly. First thing is that Ben Birch over at White Rose Society is having a fundraiser. Do the right thing. Go over there and give him a little bit of a donation if you can, because, you know, he needs it. He's He's needing that to help keep the things going over there at his place. And, you know, if you can, spare a few cents. As I like to say, go without having a latte for a couple of days and divert that fun flow to him. Yeah, do it if you can. Because without him, we wouldn't be archiving the radio programs here on the Head On Radio Network. There'd be just a dearth of programming out there to listen to for free. And he doesn't send a bill. He's not like a mean guy. He doesn't come to your house and knock on the door. And you know, he's not a big dude with a baseball bat. He's just a guy who's recording radio on the Internet and makes it available to people like you and me for free. Now, he makes it available to us for free, but he does have to cover the bills. And, you know, that's the way things work. It's like a... I don't want to say the terminology that I would say. It's about being self-supporting. And if you avail yourself of that service, then do try to give him a little bit of a donation there. All right. Today on the radio program, a little bit later on, we'll have Norman Birnbaum, and we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things. But he is a university professor emeritus from Georgetown University Law Center. He's also a contributing writer for The Nation magazine. You can go there and check out all the stuff he's written. There's a lot of stuff available online, probably going back years. Pretty neat guy. I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with him on air. Met him at the Taking Back America conference in Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago. We had a wonderful conversation, and we're going to talk about detention. We're going to talk about the European, specifically European detention, European/American detention, of, you know, the terror suspects that they call terror suspects. We're also going to be taking your phone calls today at 1-877-443-2366. We're going to be talking about the whole Hamdi case today, that the ruling that was handed down by the Supreme Court. That was actually quite surprising to me. I don't know about anybody else. It was quite surprising to me. And the reason why it was quite surprising to me was that I figured that this court would rule in the favor of George W. Bush, you know, in perpetuity because of the folks who were on the court. But apparently there was a swing vote, and that swing vote took that Hamdi ruling over to, dare I say it, the progressive side. And the reason why it took it over to the progressive side is because, obviously, you can't detain people indefinitely and claim that there is no international jurisdiction or nothing that governs their detention. I mean, that's just like saying, you know, I declare the half-acre lot that I own in Greensboro, North Carolina, I declare that half-acre lot to be a sovereign, not a sovereign nation, but a sovereign entity. And if you enter this half-acre lot, then you... and your laws and your international, nothing applies here. It's my law, and I say what goes. Now, if you come here, I may not let you leave, and I might put you in the backyard with Poochie. And Poochie's kind of mean. He doesn't like strangers. That's what I'm trying to get at. And, you know, that's what we've got going on in Guantanamo Bay. That's what we've got going on in all of the other various... actually secret prisons around the world. There's no international body that's governing how these people are getting treated. Now, do we know for sure that they're even terrorists? We don't know. I mean, I'd like to say that they are. I'd like to trust my government to say that, yes, they are terrorists, but this is the same government, ladies and gentlemen, this is the same government that has been secretly wiretapping millions of Americans for the last 5 years. Didn't want to tell us about it. And then claims that because we know that the media who reported it to us, who blew the whistle on this, should be tried for treason. I mean, come on. Oh, my goodness. We live in a topsy-turvy world now. And it really is amazing to me that we have this kind of situation going on where there is rendition, people are getting kidnapped, they get, you know, shoved in the back of vans, bags thrown over their head, shipped off to an airport to parts unknown, flown on CIA rendition flights. And, you know, yeah, there's torture going on, too. Now, you know, I know that there's a lot of people out there who would like to say all of those people deserve to be tortured. But, you know, before we torture them, maybe we should at least, you know, try to conclude without a shadow of a doubt that indeed they are terrorists. If you're going to torture them, at least make sure that they're guilty. Ay, ay, ay. Okay. It's about a quarter after, and we're going to hit our first break, and then we're going to come back and do some talking about specifics here on the Bruce Burch radio program. Your calls are welcome. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. I'd like for you to get in on that contest if you haven't voted. Go check that out and vote and on brucebirch.com all the way at the bottom of that page. And also at brucebirch.com is the show post for today. So if you want a link to find out who Norman Birnbaum is or anything else, go check that out as well. I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid. We didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Burch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to naja.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. Naja, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Are rising fuel prices keeping you at home? Then here's some good news from the IRS. First, your purchase of a new hybrid or electric vehicle entitles you to a tax deduction that could amount to several thousand dollars. And you don't have to itemize to get this tax break. Second, if you're claiming the standard mileage rate for business travel in 2005, remember to figure in the 8 cents per mile increase for the last 4 months of the year. For more news on tax deductions, visit IRS.gov.
About my boots, ain't about
right, you're back on the Bruce Burch radio program, Radio for a Free America. Want to get back over to this Hamdi story because I know that, I'm sure that my good friend Guy James covered this, but, you know, I wanted to get over this story because I find it to be kind of important. What we've seen with this president is we have seen a continuing pattern, if you will, of what he would like to, what I would call monarchical behavior. He's acting like he's a king, that he has all authority, and you know what? Today the Supreme Court ruled that George Bush overstepped his authority in denying terror war detainees civilian trials. The court has ruled that U.S. detainees classified by the Bush administration as, quote, enemy combatants, end quote, cannot be considered exempt from the Geneva Convention. The administration had attempted to argue that the combatants had no rights under U.S. or international law, or that only certain rights under each applied. The Supreme Court disagreed. The trials had been challenged by Salim Ahmed Hamdan, former bodyguard and limo driver for Osama bin Laden. Hamdan has been held at Guantanamo Bay for 4 years, eventually being charged with conspiracy. The court pointed out that there is actually no international law against conspiracy. The ruling is not likely to result in the release of Hamdan or other Guantanamo prisoners. In fact, it may result in longer detentions while the United States attempts to put another system into place. Oh, joy. The 5-3 decision overturns a lower court ruling in the government's favor by Chief Justice and Bush appointee John Roberts. Roberts did not participate in the decision. I wonder who the three were. I bet they were. I bet we know who they were. I bet the three were Alito and let's see, what's his name? Sammy Bad Breath. The other guy. Scalia. I guess they call him. Scalia. Tony. Fat Tony. And I bet the other one was Clarence Thomas. I bet those were the three. Now, I could be wrong, and, you know, send me an email. Let me know that I'm wrong. Okay, we're going to go over to the phones real quick and take a call before we have our interview at the bottom of the hour. Our good friend Jim from West Virginia is on line one. Jim, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm not in West Virginia.
Okay.
No. I'm in an undisclosed location, just like yourself. Okay. Did you listen to the Guy James show today?
I didn't have a chance to. I was actually preparing for my show and doing some other things. Tell me about it.
Yeah, a copy of this email that was sent to Rush Limbaugh by a sex therapist. It will just knock you right out of your half acre. and Poochie will be dragging your ass back into the house.
Okay. Tell me about the email.
Well, it's just this sex therapist sent Rush Limbaugh this thing about basically it had to do with a man his age using Oxycontin would probably have to use Viagra, and he realized how embarrassing the use of Viagra would be because, you know, if you're in that situation and you can't get it up, you don't want the whole world to know it, particularly if you're a butthole like him. But nonetheless, she went into the business about his three failed marriages and his preferences for perhaps Dominican young boys, and I couldn't believe it. I mean,
this was an email to Guy James.
Yeah, from this, and it was a copy. I guess it was copy to Rush Limbaugh, care of Guy, and Guy read it. And I said, for God's sake, you got to send this to me. I want this thing framed. I want to put it in Gothic letters.
I bet you if you email Guy, he'll send you a copy of it.
I did, and I'm waiting on it to come in now. If it is, I'll drop you a copy of it.
Please do.
By the way, I sent you an entry in your contest. Is it still open?
Well, the contest, you can vote now. We've closed on the suggestions, but you can still send a suggestion, though.
Yeah, I sent you a suggestion just now.
Okay.
But anyway, so you might find it there. Listen, let me ask you something. What do you think about Barack Obama yesterday?
What did I think about Barack Obama? I think that religious expression is protected under our Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that, you know, when you go out into the public sphere, that you need to be aware that when you talk about such things in the public sphere, that you are going to be alienating some people and drawing some others to you. Now, he's going to do that with anything that he talks about, but a public figure such as a politician speaking about religious things out in that kind of arena, you know, can bring trouble. And I actually talked about it some yesterday. You know, I think that we need less religion in politics rather than more. I think we need more spiritual. I think we need more spiritual principles in politics, but less religion.
Well, I think perhaps it can be brought in under spiritual principles. That's for sure. And if people question you about what your principles are, you can certainly use that as a backdrop, and you can be genuine about it. And as far as the phony types of intellectualism with which they have painted the Democratic Party, I think that's an issue that could be addressed too. You know, sure. Basically, this is what I'm looking at here, and I'm just a pragmatist. I'm tired of getting my ass whipped every election, you know? And it's like LBJ once said, if you need to have something done to get by me, then you're going to have to kiss my ass on the Capitol steps and turn around and tell every swinging you-know-what that's looking at you that it smells just like a rose. And sometimes in politics, you got to do things you don't want to do to get there, and then you can do what you need to do and set forth your agenda if you can get past Scylla and Charybdis, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we've got to...
I'm trying to be contentious when I say that, but I mean, that's just my basic belief. I mean, certain things you just got to hold your nose and do.
I agree. Now, you know, I want to just really briefly, I want to make it very clear. I think that everyone's world view is tainted by what they believe in, okay?
Of course. Absolutely.
So if... And so, a person such as Barack Obama or anyone who is religious, who is Christian or whatever it is, Jewish, or Muslim, they're going to be looking at the world through the lens of their faith, because that's part of who they are, part of their worldview, part of what their belief system is. Okay. Now, it's one thing to sort of make decisions based on that and to be quietly expressive of your faith through your actions. Okay. It's another thing entirely to sort of go out and say, well, this is, you know, and trumpet your horn about what you believe. I mean, I think that there's a way to do that so that it's not an effrontery, if you follow me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to be very subtle, and you have to be very genuine, too, because these people could pick up, you know, whether you're being counterfeit or bogus or real, you know?
Right.
If you're trying to win votes, that's going to get you to be a whole bunch of Liebermans, and I don't even think he's human. I think he's an alien. But, you know, I really do. I honestly, every time I look at that man, I think he's from another planet. But I just think that maybe we need to rethink some things and to redraw some battle plans. And you know, I thought that Mr. Obama had some good things to say. I really did. It's just my personal belief there. And I think we could profit by that, you know. I definitely think we need to be more cohesive. Because, like I say, I'm just tired of getting my ass whipped every 2 years or 4 years.
Well, I think that part of this process this fall is going to be interesting because it's going to be a judgment. It's not so much on the mandate of the Democrats as it will be on the failed mandate of the Republicans. Now, there's, you know, and actually, Jim, I've got to go to a break, and this is really one of those conversations that could take another 15, 20 minutes.
No problem.
Why don't you call back later in the show and we'll talk about it?
All right, I'll try to, but, see if you can get my suggestion, okay? It may be lost
right.
in the ether. Take care.
I will definitely, I'll check it. Okay, thanks a lot, Jim, for calling in. Our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere in the northern hemisphere. or ionosphere, or I don't know, one of those things. All right, it's about 30 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America. Glad to have you aboard. Stick around. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website over at progressive.org. John Milios, a Marxist professor from Greece, was invited to present a paper at a conference at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, held from June 8th to June 10th. He accepted the invitation to address the conference, How Class Works. His visa didn't expire until November, and he'd used it five times before to enter the United States, but this time, he didn't get in. At JFK, Homeland Security questioned Milios for 5 hours about his political ideas and affiliations. Then they informed him that due to technical discrepancies, his visa was canceled. Before sending him home, though, they photographed everything he had in his wallet and fingerprinted each of his digits. Like the refusal to allow the Muslim scholar Tariq Ramadan to come teach at Notre Dame, the decision to send Milios packing is a throwback to the darkest days of McCarthyism when we closed our borders to professors and to artists and to writers. It's justified now by the USA Patriot Act, which says anyone can be kept out of the country who endorses or espouses terrorist activity. But the State Department's own manual interprets this to mean people with irresponsible expressions of opinion. Former Supreme Court Justice William Brennan said, "The First Amendment protects not only the right to speak, but the right to listen. That right is being taken away from us." I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Place your hand on your heart. Measure the beats. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how long it takes to protect your child's life. 5 heartbeats. That's how long it takes to learn about the dangers of pesticides that could be found in your child's classroom. Asthma, lower IQ scores, and cancer have all been linked to prolonged exposure to these toxins. But if you knew there were toxin-free alternatives to pesticides, if you knew you had a voice regarding their use, if you knew you could take action that would make your child's classroom safe today, wouldn't you do something? In a heartbeat. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Down the dreams we made real.
right, you're back on the Bruce Burch radio program, Radio for a Free America, right here on the Head On Radio Network. We have our good friend Norman Birnbaum, who is the University Professor Emeritus of Georgetown University Law Center and also a contributor to The Nation magazine. Professor Birnbaum, welcome to the Bruce Burch radio program.
Delighted to be with you and your listeners. Let's go.
Okay, great. Great to have you with us. First of all, I wanted to talk or ask you a little bit about some of the detention centers in Europe and sort of the things that have been happening over there regarding that.
Well, as you know, the CIA and other American agencies, presumably some of the Special Forces units of the Pentagon were also in on this sordid affair, have been arresting people on the territory of sovereign countries in Europe and shipping them in American planes to detention centers maintained either by the U.S. Or maintained by the U.S. In foreign countries. It is widely thought in Europe that there were two detention centers in Europe itself, one in Poland and one in Romania, both recent entrants into the European Union.
Okay.
There have been some interesting accompanying developments. There's an enormous repugnance for this in European public opinion and in many parts of the European political spectrum, by no means confined to the traditional left or even what we would think of as liberals or libertarians. It goes deep into the European right. They're well aware of American debates about the legality of Guantanamo and of the constitutionality or the dubious constitutionality of the Patriot Act. They follow these things very closely. The reporting in Europe on our own domestic debates is really quite good. And so they're aware that any number of Americans find these things morally and politically repugnant as well. Secondly, they feel that this is a clear violation of European sovereignty. Thirdly, they're angry with those segments of their own governments or their own secret and police services, which have, sometimes with a wink from the government, sometimes not, collaborated with the United States in measures which are clearly violations of due process and law in the European countries concerned. The British and the German governments and the ex-government in Italy, the Berlusconi government, have come under heavy fire for this. In fact, in Italy, a state prosecutor has managed to get the names of 21 American agents who lived very high indeed in the best Milan hotels and then snatched somebody off the streets of Milan with or without the connivance of the Italian secret services. And put him into a detention, flew him away from Milan Airport to someplace. And they have indicted, they've got the names, and they've indicted these persons who have long since cleared out of Italy. And so the question is, what will become of that indictment? The German government, for its part, is particularly embarrassed because some of this happened when the Social Democrats control through the Chancellor's office the intelligence services and the German foreign minister, who's really quite a good guy, and one could hardly wish for a better one from the viewpoint of international justice and peace. Frank-Walter Steinmeier has the misfortune to have been the chief of staff to Schroeder when he was Chancellor, and as such was directly responsible for the security services. So there's an enormous movement of recrimination and protest inside Europe itself. The European Parliament has asked questions. The Council of Europe, which is a different body, had the Swiss Justice Minister make a lengthy report. The least that can be said is that many many of the European security services have been non-cooperative, and our own have fallen totally silent.
Well, now you said that there were a couple of these prisons or these detention facilities were in Romania and Poland. Is there any reason why these two countries were picked?
Well, Poland, as you know, maybe as a counterbalance to Russia, for various reasons, successive governments in Poland since the collapse of the communist regime in 89 have been extremely friendly to the United States, have thought of the United States as a counterweight, not alone to the old Soviet Union and the new Russia, but curiously enough to the countries of the European Union in which they've now eagerly sought and accepted membership. And the detention facility in Poland is reported to have been an old detention facility of the old Stalinist and post-Stalinist security services in Poland,
who
weren't particularly known for their tenderness or attention to legality. Romania, which was, by the way, always the Romania in the last years of the terrible Ceausescu regime, which was a terrible dictatorship, was objectively allied to the United States because it defied the Soviet Union. So Romania, despite its internal dictatorship, was seen rather benevolently by a succession of American regimes, beginning at least with the Nixon government. I think Ceausescu may indeed even have had very friendly relations with our governments from Nixon, I think, onwards, because of this independence from, it may have even gone back earlier, the old Soviet Union. So this regime with considerable authoritarian remnants dating back to then again professed to ally itself in some ways with the United States. It also has thought this opens the way for investment and other favors, though it hasn't gotten their citizens admitted to the U.S. without paying through the nose for the privilege of applying for visas they don't invariably get. So there's been this alliance with the United States on the part of two countries whose own present governments have, particularly in Poland, have a rather dubious democratic credentials, but a very authoritarian and right-wing government in Poland with traces of traditional anti-Semitism, homophobia, authoritarianism, you name it. And they are clamming up on what they might have done or might not have done with respect to cooperating in the American policy, which bears the marvelous Orwellian name of rendition. Don't say you go to the streets and sweep somebody up. Why, you say you have a policy of rendition. Orwell lives again.
Well, yeah, no, it's amazing they put that term on basically kidnapping. I mean, you know,
the straight English phrase kidnapping would deal with it, but God forbid that one of our bureaucrats should use it.
Hmm? You're absolutely right. Now, with the new Italian government, you know, Silvio Berlusconi, who really didn't want to let go of his power there. What kinds of reforms are presently going on with that government?
Well, first of all, it should be said that that government, which is headed by a very, very good ex-prime minister and has two excellent ex-prime ministers in critical jobs, that is Massimo D'Alema, who was a prime minister, is the foreign minister, and the interior minister is a particularly scrupulous a public figure named Giuliano Amato, who was also a very, very good prime minister in our Clinton years. He's the interior minister.
Okay.
They've just taken office. They have a very, very narrow majority in the Senate, though a perfectly good working majority in the Camera, in the main house of Parliament. So there's a little margin of constraint on them, and the Berlusconi parties, particularly Berlusconi's own party, Forza Italia, which was originally named after his corrupt soccer club, is trying its best to sabotage proceedings and bring them down. At this point, the government has made no moves on the rendition front. It has announced that it will begin to pull the Italian police armed contingent, which is the contingent of the armed police, the Carabinieri, out of Iraq, and is going to do this step by step. So they have forces in Afghanistan. What the new justice minister will do in this government will do about the demand for to countersign the papers, which would then transmit to American courts the demand for the arrest, if necessary, of the CIA agents, and their transshipment to Italy for trial is a very open question. They haven't ruled on this yet, and I don't know what they'll do. It's a coalition with different points of view in it. Hmm?
Right, right. Now the two prisons. Let me ask you this: now these two detention facilities are. Do you know whether or not these are actually American administrated, or are these administrated by locals there in Poland and Romania?
I have seen no direct information on that as to whether they're administered by Romanians or Poles, much on the manner of our taking. One of the people who was picked up, he was picked up in Macedonia, transshipped, and maybe through Mallorca or someplace, or Egypt, transshipped to Afghanistan and Syria, where he was tortured. Is a German citizen. Sometimes these people are transshipped to countries where the old American third degree of the 30s would be thought of as a concession to a soft penal code, that is, they're transmitted to countries of unremitting barbarism, but which are allied to us for these purposes, where the prisoners are roughed up in ways that would shame even Gonzalez, Cheney, and Bush to admit doing at Guantanamo or elsewhere in U.S. territory. I do not know about who has directly administered the facilities in Poland and Romania, the existence of which, by the way, the Poles and Romanians, despite much evidence and reporting by their own press, continue to deny.
Really?
Yeah. Well, denial, as you know, is, if it's not the next best thing to godliness, it's a frequent political tactic.
That's for sure. You know, yeah, that's for sure. Well, we didn't know anything about. We don't know. What are you talking about? NSA wiretapping? We're not. We don't know what you're talking about. what's going on?
It's a protection to defend us against the imminent threat of attack. Just like if you use a bank to send $500 to your your mother-in-law in Stockholm, the transaction is duly registered. Might go to a terrorist, after all. Hmm?
Oh, yeah, especially, well, if it's your mother-in-law, it might be. I mean, well, we're not going to go there. That was a bad joke. I'm sorry. I guess the other thing I wanted to sort of hear you talk about a little bit is the future of Tony Blair and how the European community is treating him.
Well, Blair has a very ambiguous. Let's look at the wider European picture and then shift our attention to the UK itself.
Okay.
The wider European picture, Blair, when he came in, was looked upon with hope. He was fresh. He was open. It was then felt that he had tilted or pushed, particularly after the agreement with Bush to join as a yay-saying junior partner in every lie and misconception about Iraq with a lot of troops. It was then thought that he had really tilted back to the old so-called privileged or special relationship with the United States, which generally for the British meant that they were expected to be particularly quick to carry out orders and particularly slow to object. Which was also objected to in England itself. Blair, when the British had the revolving presidency of the European Union, it revolves every shifts every 6 months to another country. It wasn't thought that he did very much. And it's also thought that even though he's the head of a Labour Party or a Social Democratic Party, that Blair has been particularly backward and indeed recalcitrant in developing what might be called a social Europe, that is a unified social area in Europe with a more or less universalized welfare state rather than just a free trade zone. So that it's really felt that Blair, I think in wide sectors of Europe, it's felt that Blair has been something of, well, I hesitate to use the old phrase, but I use it. You can't say he's been a Trojan horse for the United States because there's been nothing hidden or deceptive about it. He's carefully balanced the European integration of Great Britain against the so-called privileged or special relationship with the United States. That brings us to Great Britain itself. This has been resented by important segments of British opinion, even by some Tories who place some value on British independence, certainly by the Third Party, the Liberal Party, by the Scots National Party, which is strong in Scotland, and by large parts of the Labour Party itself, which is seriously divided on this and other issues, which focus and the division focuses right now on the question: how soon can Blair be persuaded to depart? The Labour Party doesn't want to have to push him out, as the Tories pushed out Mrs. Thatcher when the time came with considerable ruthlessness. Blair has promised that he will not finish out this term, that is, that at some point he will hand over, presumably, to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown, who is more of a traditional Labourite, let's say, more interested in redistribution and the welfare state, but might have more difficulty with certain segments of the public. And this issue is now dominating a good deal of political debate in England. So that I think it's fair to say that Blair is becoming very rapidly, if he hasn't already become, what we would term a lame duck in politics. So that every initiative he tries to take, people ask, well, will he stay to carry it through, or does he have the backing in his own party and opinion? His standing and opinion has sunk rather remarkably. I saw a poll result today which suggested that his approval is about as low, his approval rating is about as low as that of his good friend, the American president at the moment, that is in the 30s. And that's a bad sign because at one point he was very much approved of across party lines, and indeed the polling results show his party consistently 3 to 5 points behind the Tories in a general election, with the Tories at circa 36 and Labour at circa 30, which would mean a very, very serious defeat were they to go to the polls, let's say, tomorrow. And for all of these reasons, as well as the general feeling that the Third Way or Blair's initiatives are either contentious or somehow crabbed and obsessive, like his belief in law and order. He's recently been repudiated by the British justice system, just as Bush was repudiated today on special tribunals in Guantanamo. Blair was repudiated when the High Court, a High Court judge, ruled that he could not keep suspects under some kind of detention order. But they had to be tried or released. There's a general feeling that Blair has run out of steam in terms of his major reforms, is increasingly authoritarian, can't admit his mistake in Iraq, and that the sooner he goes, the better for his own reputation and everybody and everyone else. Labour's going to have a very tough time confronting the new Tory leadership. There's a man named Cameron, also a Scot. The Scots seem to run England, despite having their own autonomy these days. Brown is Scots. Cameron is obviously Scots. The new head of the Conservative Party has at least on the surface or ornamentally pushed the party in a more liberal, less xenophobic and less traditional Tory direction, and is thought to have some chance of doing well with voters who formerly voted for Blair. So that I think it can be said that Blair's days are numbered. We're coming up to a Labour Party Congress. Those are very important events in as registers of opinion inside a party in September, and I think there will be some real tensions at that event. It's difficult to know what Blair will do or say about his intention to depart.
Okay. We're running up to the top of the hour, but I have one more question for you, Professor Birnbaum, and that would be for a guy who has seen a number of political cycles in our nation. You know,
you become an expert. Go on, yeah.
Well, that
is birthday, so there we are. Go on.
Okay. Well, the question I would have is, you know, what do you see for the future of America?
Well, that's hard to put in short terms. Sometimes I'm pessimistic. I swing wildly between pessimism and optimism.
Okay.
At the moment, I'm pessimistic when I read the daily news. I'm more optimistic when I think of the long-term changes that we've had in American history. I'm optimistic when I think of the day-by-day work done by the many groups who met, for instance, at the recent meeting of the Campaign for America's Future. I'm pessimistic when I look at the lack of combativity and lack of integrity of so much of the Democratic Party, which doesn't seem willing to fight and has lost its connection with its own roots, which lie with Franklin Roosevelt, the New Deal, the domestic Lyndon Johnson, and with the better parts of the tradition represented by Jimmy Carter. That is, the party has been thoroughly Clintonized, mixing public opinion nostrums with strategic retreat all along the line, domestically and in foreign policy. I do think that what is necessary is for lots more of our ordinary citizens to take the view that the country belongs to them, that it's up to them to participate locally, at the state, region, and nationally in politics, to increase the percentages with which we vote, which are disgracefully low compared with the other industrial democracies whom we pretend to give lessons to about democratization. I don't see immediately any sign of this grand seizure of the development of a new and militant political consciousness on a broader front. But I do see lots of newer groupings at the base, which and lots of interest amongst younger people, college students, younger people in the unions and in the citizens groups. That gives me some hope. I'm not prepared to go down, so to speak, in just in total despair. But I think it's going to take an awful long time for us to reconstruct our nation.
Well, Professor Birnbaum, Professor Norman Birnbaum, thank you so much for joining me today. And I really, you know, we're going to have to do this again.
Well, I'm delighted to do it. And I've enjoyed talking with you and indirectly, of course, with the listeners. You've got my number. You know where to find me. I'll be delighted to do it again.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. I definitely will. We'll do it again. Professor Norman Birnbaum, who is a university professor emeritus, Georgetown University Law Center, and also contributor to The Nation magazine. Thanks for joining me today. And ladies and gentlemen, we're coming up on a hard break. We're going to do the news here on the Bruce Birch radio program, and then we'll be back for the second hour here on the Head On Radio Network.
Behind the wheel of a large automobile. You may
Quality News Network. In Washington, the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-3 vote that the Bush administration overstepped its authority regarding the detainees at the Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba, specifically in regard to ordering military war crimes trials for the prisoners. Writing for the majority, Justice John Paul Stevens said those proposed trials are illegal, both under U.S. law and the internationally recognized Geneva Conventions, which protect the rights of soldiers and prisoners of war. At the White House today, the president responded to the court's ruling by saying that he would work with Congress to get their approval so that the U.S. can try terrorism suspects at military tribunals. There are currently about 450 detainees at the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo Bay. The decision today did not mention whether the prison should be closed down. Also at the White House today, the president met with the Japanese Prime Minister, who will be leaving office soon. The two countries are united in sending North Korea a message that it is unacceptable to test launch a long-range missile. In Washington, the head of the Veterans Administration announced that the stolen laptop computer and hard drive that held personal information on more than 26 million U.S. veterans has been found. According to a special agent, forensic tests revealed that those sensitive files were not accessed. There have been no arrests in the incident so far. In Kirkuk, Iraq, a suicide bomber today hit a funeral procession. Iraqi police say that 17 people were killed and 50 injured. In the Gaza Strip today, Israel continued its military campaign to secure an Israeli soldier who is said to be in the custody of Hamas gunmen. Israeli troops have arrested dozens of Hamas lawmakers. Meanwhile, Israeli officials say that a hostage was found shot to death in the head in the West Bank. Palestinian militants say they killed him after kidnapping him. At the United Nations today, Iran's foreign minister rejected a July 5th deadline from the Group of Eight industrialized nations for Iran to respond to the package of incentives offered to halt its controversial nuclear program. He stated again that Tehran would respond by August 22nd. In Kuwait, for the first time, women are voting and running for office. Altogether, 25 of the 250 total candidates trying to get a seat on the parliament are women. And in Indonesia, the editor-in-chief of Playboy magazine is named as a suspect in an indecency case. You're listening to QNN.
Most people would rather have root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The oil company BP is under federal investigation for illegally manipulating propane prices in 2004. BP traders are accused of buying large quantities of propane to gain a dominant market position. The company denies any wrongdoing. The Commerce Department reports that in the first quarter of the year, the U.S. economy grew at a 5.6% rate. That's the fastest growth in 2.5 years and more than first thought. An improvement in the country's trade deficit reportedly helped the gross domestic product. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates today by a quarter point to 5.25%. It's the 17th straight interest rate hike. For the third straight week in a row, mortgage rates went up. Freddie Mac reports that the nationwide average rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is now 6.78%. That's the highest level in more than 4 years. The Labor Department says that first-time claims for state unemployment insurance benefits rose last week to 313,000. That's a slightly larger number than expected. However, analysts say the levels still indicate a healthy job market. Google is launching a payment service that stores users' credit cards so they can purchase items online faster. The internet search engine company is trying to expand its reach. Light Sweet Crude is currently trading at $73.55 a barrel today. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 176 points. The Nasdaq is up 49 points. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
It's time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, you're back on with Bruce Birch Radio, and this is Radio for a Free America. Glad to be back with you. It's about 6 minutes past the hour here on a wonderful sunny afternoon. Doesn't look like there's going to be any rain today, thank God. We only got about 20 inches this week. Probably not that much. We just had Norman Birnbaum, professor emeritus of Georgetown University Law Center and also contributor to The Nation magazine on our show. And I got to tell you, you know, I don't know if he's listening right now, but that was an amazing interview. Just, oh, my gosh. It, you know, he's going to be celebrating his, I think he said his 80th birthday, his next birthday. And this guy is incredible. I sat down with him for a while at the Taking Back America conference in Washington, D.C., and talked with him, picked his brain a little bit on some of these things that are going on, especially in Europe. And, you know, it just amazed me, the wealth of information, and I knew then and there that I had to have him on the radio. So there you go. We're going to be calling him back again at some point, bringing him back into the show, and hopefully sooner than later, to talk about various things that are going on around the world. Just amazing, amazing man. All right, let's get back into the rest of the program. If you like to chat while you listen, you can go over to headonradionetwork.com and go slide right into our live chat room. We've got a few folks in there chatting away about a number of different things, including, let's take a look and see, including World War II, it looks like, a few other, talking about veterans, or they were talking about flags earlier, the Union Jack and that kind of stuff. Always going to be an interesting conversation there in the Head On Radio Network chat room, so do go over and check that out. It's open 24 hours a day. It does not close. So you can go in there and hang out and talk to folks whenever. At 3 o'clock in the morning, there's people in there. I was in there this morning at 3 o'clock myself. So, again, if you'd like to get in on the program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. Also, if you like to send email, you can send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. That's bruce@brucebirch.com. Looks like our friend Jim actually did send in a that's a nice one. I like that one. Our friend Jim from West Virginia did send in a contribution to the what do we call the rabid religious right? Now, not just people who are Republicans and are also religious. We're talking about those who are so far over there in the religious realm and on the right that they're just impossible to deal with. Jim sends this in. Bruce, he says, what about fundamental mindless? Okay. Fundamental mindless. Interesting. We'll definitely keep that. Keep that in mind. All right. The other thing, too, is that we're going to be heading over to some stories here, but I was just checking emails just to see if there's anything else that we wanted to cover. If you would like to send me email, please do so. Bruce@brucebirch.com. That's BURCH.com. Okay. Now, the Supreme Court, we talked about before we went over into the interview, we talked about what happened with the thing over Guantanamo. And what's happened here? This does not mean that the Supreme Court has shut down Guantanamo or that the Supreme Court has ruled it to be, you know, illegal. What the Supreme Court has done has ruled that U.S. detainees cannot be considered exempt from the Geneva Convention. So the rules of the Geneva Convention have to apply to enemy combatants that are under our jurisdiction. Now, you know, and what I what wasn't clear when we were talking with Norman Birnbaum, and I was hoping I could get some clarity on that, but I'm sure, you know, it's just a highly guarded secret, is that is I asked him whether or not the detention facilities in Poland and Romania are under our control or local control, and he didn't have an answer for that. It would make every difference in the world with regard to this ruling. If they are under our control, that would mean that the Geneva Conventions would apply there and that these folks who are in these prisons would have to be tried, you know, under U.S. or actually under, yeah, under U.S. or international law. Now, the interesting thing about this whole ruling today is that while on the one hand it wasn't really a huge deal, on the other hand it was, because it's sort of like the first slapping down, if you will, of George Bush's seemingly inherent power grab that he started from day one. He started it in Florida when they were counting the votes, and he's still doing it today. He's still doing it today. What are we going to do about it? Well, as Norman Birnbaum said, maybe we need to create a more of a militant, not violent by any stretch of the imagination, but a more militant Democratic Party that is going to fight against these things, fight against this, as rather than sort of taking this lukewarm approach of, well, we think it might be wrong, but we're not really sure. I'll tell you what I think. Absolutely. I believe very, very strongly that holding people without charge, not giving them due process for years is wrong. It's dead wrong, and we cannot do this. If we want to be the country that holds ourselves up as being the most principled nation out there, and the democracy that is supposed to be the shining light to the rest of the world, then we have to be a shining light, and there's no choice. You paint yourself in the corner. Anything other than that, and people are going to start looking at us and going, maybe we should bomb them, which is what they're doing right now. Does that excuse people bombing us? No, but you understand what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we absolutely have to be the example if we say we're going to be the example. There's no way of getting around that. All right, looks like our good friend Jim is back and probably going to go ahead and talk about the whole... what were we talking about when we left at the bottom of the last hour? Jim, are you there? Hello, Jim. I'm hearing no Jim. Okay, well, I guess Jim isn't there. Oh, is Jim there?
He's here.
Okay, there you go. All right, good to have you back. Now, the topic we were talking about at the bottom of the last hour before we had to cut over to our guest, we were talking about political stuff, were we not?
About what? I'm sorry. The word didn't come through.
We were talking about political aspirations.
Okay, political. Okay. Okay, yeah, we were. And basically, I was simply throwing out a few suggestions as to how to try to win some elections and take back our government. And, you know, I was making a few suggestions that, well, you know, there was a French king one time. In order to become king of France, he had to convert to Roman Catholicism. Do you know what his reply was?
What's that?
Paris is worth the mass.
Paris is worth the what? The
mass?
Oh, okay. Okay, there you go.
And, you know, politics, like another word begins with P, is just good old-fashioned pragmatism. And it's a matter of basically, you know, whenever you can, you compromise and you try to meet each other halfway if you can. And I don't know how successful that will be. I know there are people right now probably trying to throw rocks at me, but I think there are three issues here that we've got problems with a lot of people on. One is the war in Iraq, okay? Now, I know you guys advocate immediate withdrawal. I don't.
Sure. Okay.
I non-concur. And Iraq is like a nuclear reactor, okay? Now, a nuclear reactor is controlled by either cadmium or boron rods, which you insert, okay? Those rods can't be withdrawn or inserted immediately. They have to be done at a measured pace. And as far as the Iraq situation is concerned, I think our best bet is a measured withdrawal, which would convert our route or retreat into a strategic withdrawal, if you know what I mean, if at all possible.
A strategic redeployment, is that what you're saying?
Stroke withdrawal.
Okay.
Diminishing numbers of troops. I mean, if that is possible.
Over how long of a period of time?
I would say probably 2 years. I mean, let's face it, Bruce, as long as George Bush is in the White House, we're going to have a wartime president, and we're going to be over there, okay? I mean, they're just playing around with withdrawal as a political thing as far as the 2006 elections are concerned, and I firmly believe that the next president that will come in will be a wartime president. He'll have to deal with Bush's problems.
Yep.
That's just the way I look at it. But if we were to all of a sudden just exit and just split immediately, I think we might really do something that we would regret. I don't like the idea of our troops being over there or being hurt. I don't like the idea of civilians being murdered or whatever. But unfortunately, in the fog of war, what can I say? And, you know, that's all I can say. And I have been in touch with that type of situation personally, okay? And it
sure is
no fun, I can assure you. I just don't talk about it like some people do.
Right, right.
And the next issue is abortion. Now, there's some people that are not going to budge on that no matter what. But, I mean, there are certain, I think, pro-life people who would definitely make a concession on if abortion were necessary for therapeutic reasons, rape, incest, things of this nature. And you might get some headway in that area. I can remember when I was at Fort Jackson in Columbia, South Carolina, I went to pick up my New York Times at the Capitol newsstand, which is right in front of the State House there in Columbia. And they had this anti-abortion rally. And I asked this woman who was carrying a sign, and I said, I'll ask you a question, lady. And she said, well, what is it? And I said, instead of you being out here in this hot sun, you know, carrying this sign, I said, why aren't you at home taking care of one of these babies that you're so concerned about? And I thought that woman was going to kill me. I mean,
well,
really.
Because it's born then. We don't care about it when it's born, Jim.
Well, no, that's the thing. It just burns me up. But I mean, you know, that's something, that's a hot button issue with some people. You're never going to give them the budge on that because they'll say, as long as you support pro-life or pro-choice, I will never vote for your candidate, da da da. That's just the way it is. And, you know, that's something I wish that the Vatican would reconsider. You know, if we could have a Vatican III in which they could perhaps have a different think on that, you know, that would be manna from heaven. Of course, you know, sometimes I wish beer was Johnny Walker Black. I mean, rainwater was Johnny Walker Black, but you know what I'm saying? At least I can hope.
It'd be a lot cheaper that way, wouldn't it?
Yeah, hell yeah. And then, you know, the other thing is this business with the, God, my mind is going. I just took my medication. Let me think. All right, we talked about the war. We talked about abortion. Gay marriage.
Okay.
You know, I don't believe in gay marriage. I believe in a marriage between a man and a woman, okay? I do believe in civil unions. And I do believe that partners, domestic partners and things like that. In other words, these people could be co-joined with benefits without benefit of clergy.
That would
satisfy some people.
Right. Well, I think that marriage itself is a religious institution, and that civil union is more of a secular governmental thing. And gay marriage to me is like, okay, well, you know what? I've seen people get married in various religious ceremonies but didn't go and get a civil, any kind of paperwork saying a marriage license or any of that other crap, and they consider themselves married. So, I mean, you know, I think it's more, I think, I go ahead, Jim.
No, no, right. You're right. Absolutely.
So I think that, you know, I think it's important, first of all, to make that sort of distinction. But I think the government absolutely, you know, should be able to recognize some form of domestic partnership and you know, and make it be an egalitarian thing so that it's not about, you know, even if you're, you know, even, so it's not even about being in love if you're in a mutually supportive relationship and you live together.
You know, Bruce, as long as it's love, the Lord doesn't mind as far as I'm concerned, right. Okay?
Right.
I mean, I talk about L-O-V-E, not L-U-V.
Okay.
And, you know, as long as it's that, that's fine. And, you know, as far as I even had a friend who's a staunch Roman Catholic and just as, oh, as far as the right as you can be, actually called me up and said, you know, I think the gay marriage thing is not such a bad idea. And I thought to myself, God, if this person can come around to that point of view, there is hope, you know?
Yeah, there is.
So, I mean, you know, there is a Santa Claus or whatever you want to call it, but, I mean, I just think that there are certain things in which we can, you know, become a little more mainstream and try to, you know, reinvent ourselves to a certain extent to become more palatable to those people who can give us, you know, our country back. Because if it stays in the hands of these current people much longer, I don't know, because, you know, Bruce, nobody's going to deal with Bush.
Yeah, and I don't think, I got to say this, though, Jim. I really don't think that the Democratic Party or that, or myself or you or any of us have drifted so far left that people are like, well, I don't want that. I think what's happened is that the characterization, the media spin, and the message that's come out of the people who have had the most money has characterized us as that, and we haven't moved. It's the perception that's moved.
Yeah, well, there's certainly more than just a modicum of truth in that statement, that's for sure. I mean,
our job, in my mind, is to try to take back the language and recreate, first of all, find Frank Luntz or whatever his name is.
Who's that?
And banish him to the Marianas Islands, and then, you know, we bring George Lakoff in and reinvent the language.
Okay.
And reframe the issues. Values, as I, you know, if you listened yesterday, I had Matt Rothschild on. I asked him about values, and he said, you know, he said, I think peace is a value.
Well, and you know, hatred is not a family value, you know?
That's absolutely right.
And, you know, I'm getting tired of having to go around and correct the spelling of faggot on people's garage doors. It has two G's, y'all, not one, two.
All right, well,
really. Well, I mean, you know, it's... I just don't understand all this business. Life is so short in the first place, and why can't people just live and let live and try to make this travail on this earth as palatable and as pleasant as possible, because at the very best we're going to get shafted in the end, you know that, and it's filled with all kinds of hills and valleys in the middle. And why people just simply cannot leave each other alone and try to help each other instead of hurt each other, it's just beyond me. I don't understand it.
Well, I think that we have to create a new groundswell, and we have to say, okay, you know what? Saying that we have no values is absolute hogwash. And I think that Obama, that might have been why Obama went out and gave that speech the other day. Because there are many, many Democrats who are men of religious faith, and there are many, many who are men and women of spiritual faith.
Absolutely. Good Lord.
In a country where we decided to have separation of those two things, one would think that even having none would be okay, right?
I guess so. You're right. Absolutely. Well, I guess so, when I said some of your people in your chat room, you can tell them that I'm not in West Virginia. I'm in Oz. That's where I've decided to be.
And that would that be A-H-Z? All right, Jim. Thanks for the call, man.
Okay. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right. Bye. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
And that's our bye now. That's our good friend Jim from somewhere north of the equator calling in on the into the Head On Radio Network studios. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let's go ahead. We skipped our middle of the hour or a quarter hour break, so let's go ahead and take an early break, and we'll come back and go right back to the phones. If you're waiting on the line, just hang out for a minute. Listen to our progressive and listen to an ad. We'll be right back. This is Bruce Birch for the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Free America, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I've seen you in the markets, I've seen you in the streets, and at your political conventions. Talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. and you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and mine. I've just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? May Jesus would bomb the Syrians, because they're not.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America. If you're interested in that musical artist, that's David Rovix. And I'm going to try to pull a coup and see if I can't get David on the show in the next couple of weeks and talk about some of the music that he's been writing recently. He is releasing a new album this fall called Halliburton Boardroom Massacre. And is going to be embarking on a southeastern tour, around sometime early this fall. And so, if you're in the South, you may get a chance to hear Mr. David Rovix. Sorry, he is progressive though. He's definitely progressive. Okay, now we're going to go back to the phone lines here on the Head On Radio Network. You can dial 1-877-443-2366 if you want to get in on the radio program today. That's the way to get to me, and that'll take you right into the studios of the Head On Radio Network there in wild, wonderful West Virginia. And my producer, Agnes, will get you right in. Looks like we've got our friend Arbortender online, too. Arbortender, how are you doing?
I'm pretty well. How are you doing today, Bruce?
I'm doing better than I deserve.
I doubt that. You deserve everything good you get, man.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And listen, I've been given a lot of thought over the last several years to this whole marriage constitutional amendment and whatnot. And I had a few comments on that topic since our last caller was I thought very insightful thoughts into the matter, and did you. And so here's just, kind of off the top of my head, what concerns me with any effort to alter the Constitution is, first of all, does it ensure, does it provision more rights, or does it actually limit rights? And just on the face of the thing, this proposal to restrict the rights of same-sex couples to marry, I don't like the idea of the Constitution becoming a vehicle for the restriction of any human rights. And then I also want to go just a little bit deeper on this, as you probably know, I've been given also a lot of attention to the Declaration and the Constitution itself, Declaration of Independence, of course, especially, coming up to this important day of remembrance of those principles. As I understand it, the deal is that the Declaration of Independence was a really clear statement on the part of the people that put this country together that people were entitled to certain rights, and that these rights were unalienable. In other words, they couldn't be taken away from them, and that the reason they had those rights was because of the laws of nature and of nature's God. That's the way I understand it. And as I understand the Constitution as a document that followed up the Declaration of Independence, which was basically them stating, we don't want these rights abridged, and so we're going to start a new government that makes sure that we can pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness from the perspective of separate and equal stations to which every single person is entitled. And if these things are true, and if the Constitution was written as a way of actually securing those rights versus limiting those rights, if the Constitution was written to secure those rights for individuals, I think there may be a very good reason why the words marry and marriage do not occur in the Constitution. And I think that is because specific enhanced rights packages are not supposed to be presented to, let's say, pairs. I think that the constitutional framers did not intend to imbue rights to religiously linked couples any differently than they did to individuals. And for me, this matter of altering the Constitution to frame this pairs of people have different rights matter, I think that that is the not a, an appropriate approach to secure individual rights. And in fact, for me, it goes much deeper than whether or not same-sex couples should be entitled to, you know, enhanced benefits of these types of unions. I think that each and every single individual should be entitled to the same equal rights, regardless of whether or not they are married. And in fact, I think marriage itself, in conveying governmental and tax-based and Social Security-based and health and all these various different benefits upon people who have engaged in this particular type of contract, I think that that on its face may be discriminatory to individual rights. And I want to know what you think about it. That was a really long paragraph, but tell me what you think.
Well, if okay, now you tell me if I'm completely off base here. I'm going to synopsize that and say that what you were saying was sort of like very, very similar to what I was saying, in that you know, a domestic partnership, a civil union, two people who choose to reside together or choose to share or collectively share assets should have all the rights and responsibilities and privileges of anyone else who has decided to do that in any other form. Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't think that anyone else, including anyone who decides to do a civil union, should be entitled to any different rights than any single person would be entitled to. I believe that discriminates against singleness.
As oh, okay.
A matter of individual rights, every individual is supposed to have these rights. And
okay.
Not only those who marry and not only those who sign these unions. That's separate and different from constitutional rights in my mind.
Okay. Well, I think and you know, I totally take your point very well. I think that the issue or one of the sticky points in all of this is that we have a society that is very much set up in favor of a marriage type of situation. And when I'm referring to that, is I'm referring to like issues surrounding insurance, issues surrounding beneficiaries of life insurance. I mean, you know, all this, these things that have sort of, it's sort of like evolved over years of traditions, if you will.
Yeah.
And although I totally take your point, I think I'm going to have to think on that. But I totally think that we should be able to assign. Like for instance, even if I'm not gay and I'm you know domestically sharing a place with someone and or whatever, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, whether they're male or female, and we're not even in a relationship, but because of the convenience of collective living, we've decided that we want to share our assets with each other. You know, we should, and I have an insurance policy at my work, and they don't have insurance. I should be able to put them on my policy and pay for them or whatever. You follow what I'm saying?
I do, and I agree. And I don't think it should be contingent in any fashion upon your agreement to submit to either the civil process of joining a civil union or the religious process of uniting in marriage. I don't think any of those rights or assignment should be contingent upon the presence of such a contract.
I agree.
One can actually just make a contract, if they're so inclined, a legally binding contract, to leave such and such to so and so, or to assign the benefits to so and so. In many situations, and where that can't be done, that's what should be ironed out. And in particular, I'm referring, I realize this would break what is we're supposed to believe is already a broken Social Security system, but I firmly believe that if I contribute to the Social Security system all my life and I never get married, I should still be entitled to leave those benefits to someone if I die before they're payable. I really do. And whether that's because I'm partnering with somebody or living with somebody or just like somebody who lives down the street, or I want to leave it to the local historical society, or something, there should be some provision for me as an individual to assign benefits from Social Security, if indeed married individuals have the ability to assign benefits after their death to some individual, then I, as a non-married, never married person, if I am denied the right to do that, I lack a significant societal right that is only owned by a married person. And that is discriminatory.
That is, I agree. You know, but put in those terms, I agree totally.
I don't know how to amend the bottom of it, but it sure is not amend the Constitution to define marriage as between a man and a woman. I think that is the larger problem that same-sex couples seek to achieve, at least in part, for themselves, is this equivalent right. And I'm saying it's not about pairs or trios or what have you. It's about individuals. And that's the reason none of that's written in the Constitution, is because we're supposed to all have those rights as individuals, as humans.
Well, these guys who are in power right now, Arbor Tender, you know as well as I do, they're only going to have power for a limited amount of time, and they know that too. And so they're trying to pull as much stuff out of this short 8-year term as they can. You know, the ship of the Republican Party is breaking up on the shoals.
Yeah.
You know, and they realize that. And this little, you know, there's a couple things about this whole last gay marriage constitutional amendment debate. Number one was it was a distraction against, you know, away from the real issues. I don't know, it's like illegal wiretapping.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
And the second thing is that, you know, there really are those within the Republican Party who want to legislate morality. You know, they want to legislate to you and me what they think is right and wrong, and tell us, you know, and to legislate our behavior. And, you know, and because they're into power, a lot of these, you know, these guys like the James Dobsons and the, you know, that's one of the reasons why I had the little contest over the last couple of days about what to name these folks, because they really, you know, there are those elements out there who really want to do, they would love to see the entire nation get turned into a theocracy. And thank those senators in D.C. who voted against the whole thing. But you know, it surprised me to see that there were 49 or 48 senators in favor of defining, you know, with a defense of marriage amendment or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
49 out of 100.
They feel they are moved by their constituencies, I guess, or by their lobbyists, or, you know, it's hard to know what the motivations of these people are doing. But I see it, you know, even though I told you how I feel about this whole, you know, individual rights business and, you know, how it trumps all this discussion of marriage and rights and civil unions and rights. And I don't want to know what anybody else is doing in their bedrooms. I really don't. I think it's hard enough to find love in the world and to find a good partnership in the world without outside entities trying to exert some sort of influence over that process. And I think people should be left alone to find happiness, whatever that means to them, to the extent they don't hurt other people. I think that's one of those fundamental rights right there. And I see this whole issue as you say, finger pointing over there. Look over there while we do this over here. You guys look over there at this issue that's really never going to get ratified. Expend a whole bunch of energy fighting it out over United States constitutional amendments that will never be ratified, such as the flag-burning amendment. I mean, and there are so many others. There are, I don't know how many open cases for amendments to the Constitution there are right now, but there's a bunch. There's a bunch. And several of them have been open for decades. Most of them, the reason they haven't been ratified is because not enough people agree that this should be done, but they provide ample fodder to focus people's attention on something that they can get riled up about, that they can have an emotional reaction to and polarize themselves with respect to their political representation. And it really just shortchanges the discussion of the major issues that we really do want these politicians and representatives to be engaged in. They're wasting their time, they're wasting our money, they're wasting our nation's resources, and I have a really sick spot in my stomach for waste. I really do, and I'm ready to quit seeing that continue.
very well said. I couldn't say it any better myself. He's fantastic. We got to take a quick break, Arbor Tender, but I really appreciate you calling in today.
Lovely to talk to you, and talk to you again soon.
Yeah, please do call back. Well, you know, I haven't. You know, this is. I don't hear you enough.
Well, I don't want to get tired or old.
Well, I don't have the power to make that happen. But I will say this: it was great to have a conversation with you about real issues rather than, smoke and mirrors.
Indeed.
So,
be well.
All right. Well, have a great. Okay.
You too. Bye.
Right. And that's our friend Arbor Tender from California, an undisclosed location left of the California-Nevada state line. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. This is our last break. We'll come back for our last segment of the radio program today. You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Free America, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine. With my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org, the know-nothings are at it again, this time trying to pass an amendment that would pave the way for the banning of flag burning, which is surely the most urgent issue that's vexing the country right now. Let's see, we got a quagmire in Iraq, another insurgency flaring up in Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden still on the loose, George Bush destroying our civil liberties at home, health care costs rising and wages falling for a majority of Americans, and all that Bill Frist and Karl Rove and Bush himself want us to focus on this week is flag burning. Well, and maybe the New York Times. The constitutional amendment is an answer to a non-existent problem. Police departments haven't exactly been reporting a rash of flag burnings recently. And the answer to this non-existent problem is profoundly un-American. They're elevating the symbol of freedom over the substance of freedom. The Supreme Court has twice ruled that flag burning is symbolic speech. It's a way of expressing disgust with the United States or its policies. Now, maybe that offends your sense of patriotism, but here in this country, we're supposed to allow for speech we find deeply offensive. That's what free speech is all about. That's why it's free. A few Democrats, like Leahy in Durbin, have courageously been making this point, but others, like Hillary Clinton, have gone along with a gagging crowd. It's not just Bush, Rove, and Frist who are the opportunists on this one. For all of them, the flag is not their last refuge, but their first. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, everything's going to be okay. That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
right, you're back on the Bruce Burch radio program, the last segment of the day for Thursday. It's about 10 minutes before the hour. Glad to have you aboard with us today. And we had a wonderful program today, just incredible, insightful comments and calls and conversations today. You know, the neat thing about conversation radio is that, yes, you are bound by the clock a little bit, but I'm not thinking that I need to, that I have to rush anybody along. I mean, I want to hear you get your points out. And so, if you call here, you can, you can do your points in 30 seconds or you can hang on and let's have a talk about something. That's the cool thing about conversation radio, is that you have the opportunity to really have your say rather than sort of like having to think in sound bites and spew your point in the way that the politicians do in D.C. to have the most impact for the least amount of time. We give you the time here to say what you want to say and get that out so that, you feel good about it. Or bad, or however you want to feel. We really don't have any power over how you feel, but at least you get the time to say what you want to say. How about that? Ah, boy. Well, and that just brings to mind something about building community. You know, one of the things that we are doing here is we're trying to create a new paradigm, if you will, in talk radio, and that is, that is conversation radio. You know, if you dig this programming, if you think this is cool, tell your friends, we're not doing the fundraisers here. Now, Ben Burch is doing one, but that's sort of to support his personal efforts at trying to keep the progressive message alive and well out there on the internet. But we're not doing a fundraiser here at the Head On Radio Network. What we're doing here instead of doing something like that, because, we're not going to beg for your money. But what we're going to do here instead, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to create a new conversation. And how do we create a new conversation? How do we change people's minds? How do we give people the opportunity to come aboard and to take part in this wonderful thing we call conversation radio? Well, we do it through a number of different ways. We do it through spreading the word. We do it through emails. We do it through talking to our friends and associates out there in the world that we know are thinking along with us politically. We do it because if we believe in something, then we spread the word about it. That's the way it works. Gosh, the other day I listened to this thing on the radio, and I really appreciated their point of view, or I really appreciated the way they treated their callers, or I really appreciated how they did what they did. Well, that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to present to you People's Radio. That's right. We're not trying to be big-name Hollywood folks telling you how you need to be a liberal. We're trying to glean from you what you believe being a liberal is about. Because ultimately, when you really think about it, it doesn't make a rat's patoot what, I hate to use this term, but what some Hollywood liberal thinks about being a liberal. What matters is what you think about being a liberal, or what you think about being progressive is, or what you think about changing this country for the better is. That's what matters. America and the battle for our freedom in this country is not going to be won by the armchair generals in New York. It's going to be won by the people who get up every morning, 7 o'clock, take a shower, go to work, come back home at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, dead tired and collapse on the couch because they did what they had to do to keep food on the table for their family. That's the deal, and that's how America is going to be won. It ain't going to be won by folks who are already making $100,000 a year. It's going to be won by the folks who are making $35,000 to $50,000 a year. It's going to be won by folks who make less than that. It's going to be won by the folks who are out there in the street right now. Because those people are the ones that really matter. Not the fat cat corporations. They've made their nut. It's you and I, ladies and gentlemen, who have a responsibility to come out tomorrow anywhere you are and spread the word about Head On Radio Network. Why? Because this is the kind of thing that can create, as my friend Peter Werby says, a velvet revolution, a revolution of ideas, a revolution of thought, not necessarily of guns and violence, but a revolution wherein the people think differently. And that's what matters. We have to think differently. We have to create a different conversation. And you know what? It's not going to happen from me telling you what to think. It's going to happen from you telling me what you think. So thank you. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for sharing your time with me. And thank you for being a part of what we call Conversation Radio. Because the conversation begins and ends with you. I'd like to thank my producer for today, Agnes Kincaid, for doing a smashing job, love. Smashing job. And also our good friend Peter G., Peter Godbold at Godbold Computer Services, for keeping the internets at the Head On Radio Network studios running in a petulant frenzy. I'd also like to thank my announcer and the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network, John Fox, for the absolutely amazing job that he does all the way from Sydney, Australia. We work miracles around here. I'm telling you, we do. I also would like to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights for sponsoring this radio.